Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navaditamastama Vidivishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 1, description of the form of Bhagavan. Page 79. It has been stated that he is devoid of all material qualities, enlisting his qualities such as knowledge, shakti, power, and aishwarya. It is also concluded that his qualities are part of his swarup, since it has been stated that he is beyond all faults and endowed with all auspicious qualities. Right? So his form has to have all these good qualities. Right? While denying material qualities, his spiritual qualities are confirmed. Thus, his qualities cannot be rejected. It is said he is devoid of fault, asta dosham, of having material qualities. This does not mean he is free of having qualities. Therefore, knowledge means knowledge of his qualities. By this knowledge, his surup is understood as it is. That is the meaning. Right? So, knowledge means knowledge of his qualities. You don't have knowledge of his qualities, you think he has no qualities, then you're not actually in knowledge. Right? So anything else other than that, the transcendental qualities of the Lord, then that means there's ignorance. Thus, the claim that Brahman is purely impersonal, with the qualities mentioned being only metaphorical, is refuted. The word Bhagavan indicates the qualities of the Lord. Bhagavan means the Sarupa of the Lord, which has Jnana, Shakti, Bala, Aishwarya, Virya, and Tejas. These qualities are the meaning of Bhagavan. Right? Because it means one who has qualities. Right? It is clear that the qualities are part of the Lord's Sarup. In manifesting the qualities, his pure Sarup is accomplished. Words like vibhum and sarvagatam are descriptive words indicating his powers. Right? So it's when he may have these powers and all that, and we describe them, but it's actually in connection with his having all these qualities that we're actually dealing with Bhagavan. Like, because otherwise we're just dealing with the aspect that he's the supreme. He's the absolute, no one's above him. Right? He's controlling everything. That aspect. But the point is he's a person who has qualities, and therefore these things are going on. Even Shankara says, these qualities, jnana, shakti, bala, aishwarya, virya, and tejas, are Vasudev Bhagavan. He borrows the Pancharatrika idea. Right? So defining the Lord with these six, that's a Pancharatrika principle. Okay. Though the idea of Bhagavan, the Lord with qualities, is praised as Shrutis and Puranas. Fault is produced in the one Lord having qualities arising from a Shrup Shakti through the concepts introduced by Advaitavadi. Such insistence does not agree with Shankara, who has said, Karnasyatma Bhuta Shaktihi. Shakti arises from the Lord. Right? So, because they're trying to stick to this one impersonal thing, then and Shankara is saying these things, then they'll separate Bhagavan from Brahman, putting Brahman as the absolute and Bhagavan then as something within the material. But if he has no material qualities, then their idea of Ishwara can't be correct. But, you know, that's the difficulty, because they're attached to this idea of exclusive oneness. You know, because it's just they're frustrated. They want to get out of here. They don't want to discuss any kind of personal aspect. So then there's a great fault, right? And because people tend to be skeptical, then it's easy to influence.
This means that between Shankaracharya and his followers, there is a difference of understanding?
Yes, because he's presenting in such a way, he's bewildering the Buddhists. right? And bring him too, but it doesn't mean that he's not bewildering by saying the correct things. You know, it's just the context you use, how you say it. You can say the truth, but bewilder somebody because they think it's something else. So in the Vedic literatures, they generally use obscure meanings. So those who then follow in the footsteps of the Acharya then know the actual meaning. And those who don't, then they come up with their own speculative meaning. So in other words, the meaning that descends, that's the actual meaning. And the one that we just by words and what we're used to, then we just do. Then it always ends up as a problem.
Can you please repeat the Kalyana Gunas, whom they belong?
Who do they belong to? Okay, these qualities. So Jnana and Bala are with Sankarsana. Aishwarya and Virya are with Prajumna, and Shakti and Tejas are with Aniruddha.
They don't interchange?
It means that all four have all the qualities, but they're specifically manifesting that particular group. That's what gives that uniqueness of that, of the Chaturvyuha manifestation. So Vasudev then performs pastimes with all, but they all have all the qualities. They're all the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just there's a slightly difference in mood. So because of the mood, then there's certain ones that'll be prominent. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Gita says, "Param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram." They do not know my supreme position as the great Lord of spiritual existence. Bhagavad Gita 9:1. Maheshwaram indicates the supreme position or param tattva, and bhuta means spiritual existence. Sridhar Swami is explained in the same manner. Bhagavan iti shabdo yam tata purusha ityapi vartate nirupadischa vasudeve kilatmani. The word Bhagavan or the purusha indicates Vasudeva, the soul of all beings, without upadis, Padma Purana. Ready.
Wasn't sure he was going to go away.
No, I thought I was going to have to put him on the next page. Thus it is clear that the Lord, Bhagavan, endowed with auspicious qualities, is self-manifesting, possessing Brahman without qualities, manifest as his aspect, and is revealed by superior knowledge of Paravidya. Madhva quotes other Shrutis as proof, commenting on Brahma Sutra 1.2.2. Right, so he's manifesting himself because if he, see the thing is we'll say, well, you have something and that comes from this. So you have the Satkaryavad, right? So then that establishes that, using that in one way. But at the same time, so it can either be used within the Shakti or with the Shaktiman. But then taking that, because they're only dealing with energy, then they'll take it that then where does God come from? But the point is he's not a Shakti. He's not an energy that needs to be manifest from somewhere. He is the source of manifestation. Therefore, he manifests himself. He's self-manifesting because he manifests through his internal potency. The internal potency is non-different from him. Through his potency, he manifests himself. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is it doesn't keep going on. It's because he's Shaktiman. You know, you can't say, okay, where does this come from? Oh, that comes from the line. Where does that come from? That comes from the transformer. Where does that come from? Oh, that comes from the main line. Where does that come from? That comes from the station. Where does that come from? That comes from the generator. You know, where does that, you know, as far as electricity go, where does that come from? No, it's the one that produces it. You know, as far as electricity goes, because that's what we're discussing. We're not discussing where the generator came from. We're discussing that. Otherwise, then... One should know the two types of knowledge, superior and inferior. The Vedas, with its limbs and sublimbs, is inferior knowledge. The superior knowledge is that by which the Lord, Paramatma, unseen and without gunas, is known. Right, so that's Paravidya. Apara is everything else. Right, so the Aparavidya is what we're engaging in Krishna's service. Right? So you engage it in Krishna's service, then it's called Aparavidya, and that's in the service of Paravidya. But you're using it on its own without Paravidya, then it's not called Aparavidya, because Apara means not transcendental. Right? So you have the transcendental and then you have the not transcendental. Mm. But if you're using aparavidya without its connection to paravidya, then it's called avidya. Yes.
Yesterday I read that the Veda, all the four Vedas is aparavidya.
Yes, the four Vedas.
The goal of the Veda is to know Krishna, so it's paravidya.
Yeah. No.
No.
It's showing thee, here as it says, the Vedas with its limbs and sublimbs is inferior knowledge. That knowledge within the Veda that's explaining the Lord, that's paravidya. But all the other aspects are that which is supporting. It's just like, let's say you have Khichdi. Okay? And in Khichdi there's some dal. Right? Or a potato. So now that there's a potato there, that's a potato, but does that mean the whole thing is now potatoes? Yeah. So, the Veda, being the authority, being the basis, its purpose is to know Krishna. So that's why these points are what's there. So all that knowledge together, that's the Upanishads, that's Vedanta. Somebody says. Because it says it's branches and sub-branches. It's limbs and sub-limbs. So you have to include, then in that, the Veda is there, the Samhita is there, then the Brahmanas, that's just the mantras, then the Brahmanas explain how to use it in rituals. The Aranyakas explain the metaphysical aspects of it. The Upanishads, they're explaining the transcendental knowledge. So when we talk about transcendental knowledge in the Veda, we're talking about the Upanishads, not about the whole thing. Does that make sense? Then you have the sub-branches, then you have, you know, the four aspects of language, then you have ritual, and you have astrology. You know what I'm saying? So if they're used for paravidya, then the eyes aparavidya, then it carries. It's just like, is the wire electricity? Yes or no? Well, that's too esoteric of a question.
No.
You know, in the house, you have a light bulb.
Yeah.
Right? And then the light bulb then is connected to the switch. How is it connected to the switch?
The wire.
Wire, yes. So what goes through the wire? So is the wire electricity? Yeah, but it can carry. So that's the point. Aparavidya can carry the transcendental knowledge and be engaged in transcendence. While the avidya, generally speaking, it's not, doesn't work so good like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Here specifically they mentioned Paramatma before they mentioned Bhagavan and before Brahman. Is there any significance for that?
By which the Lord Paramatma is unseen without gunas is known. It means you're getting all of them there, but it's just you also as Madhvacharya then is speaking in a way that that this is the area that they kind of relate to. Because you're talking about the Supreme Atma. Supreme Atma is Krishna. But at the same time, it's generally we'll take it as Paramatma.
Mm.
You know, that's the general usage. So
Madhvacharya
speaking? Unless Jiva Goswami, because he says Madhva quotes other Shrutis as proof, commenting on Brahma Sutra 1.2.2, unless he's just mentioning that, and then this is another point. The qualities are revealed through paravidya or superior knowledge. Brahman is described by Brahmanas as unseen, inactive, indescribable, happiness, knowledge, ability, and strength. Kotaravya Shruti. Commenting on Brahma Sutra 3.2.23, he quotes, yeah, this must all be him because he's saying he. There is knowledge of the jiva, and there is knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Supreme knowledge is eternal bliss, undiminished and complete. Madhva quotes another Shruti. What constitutes the Lord becomes manifest as non-different from himself. What constitutes the Lord? The Lord's very essence is knowledge, power, and specific shaktis. Right, so the Lord is manifest as non-different from himself. It means what is the Lord is non-different from him. So his energy, everything like that, then that is him himself. And then he has his energies. It's just like you have the energies, but even though he's manifesting through his energies, you can still tell the difference between him and the energies. Does that make sense? He has his form, but you can tell that's his form, not Radharani or Mother Jashoda. Right? This quotation explains that the Shakti and the qualities of the Lord are one with the Lord. Yasya jnana mayam tapaha. The Lord is composed of knowledge and power. Mundaka Upanishad 119. Power is his spiritual form. Right? Because power then means his Shaktis. Like that. Vishnu is light. Vishnu is Brahma. Vishnu is the Atma. Vishnu is strength. Vishnu is bliss. Chaturveda Shika. It's one of the books quoted by Madhvacharya. Problem is these are all handwritten on leaves, so if someone doesn't maintain them very nicely, they disappear. And generally that means you're going to keep them nicely, and now and again you're going to rewrite them. But if no one keeps them nicely or no one rewrites them, then bugs eat them. You know, because they're also, I guess, you could say a variety of scholar. You know how you say a book, you know, a bookworm. Yeah, you know, so they totally into the books. Yeah. The Shakti and possessor of the Shakti are non-different. Though non-different, they appear to be distinguished from the Lord as Icha, Jnana, and Kriya. Bhagavat Tantra. Icha Shaktir, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shaktir, Iti, Tridha. Shakti Shakti Matos Chapi Nabheda Kaschid Ishyate. There are three Shaktis, Icha, Jnana, and Kriya. There's no difference between these Shaktis and the Lord, Vishnu Samhita, because they are Him. Right? It's just that He has variety within His Sarup, so therefore then they manifest in this way. Yes?
Can we say that these three, Icha, Jnana, and Kriya, are part of His internal potencies, Sarup Shakti?
Yes, but you also see the same position. We're trying to apply that in the external. Because, see, as the Icha, the Jnana and Kriya are for pleasing Krishna. You have arrangements that you can make. So those arrangements, you know, it gives different variety and this and that kind of thing, different effects, different outcomes. And from that, it's, you know, it can be pleasing, right? You're engaging with the senses, the emotions, the intelligence. So there's some exchange. And so then one will feel that, you know, they have some interest. But what's the purpose of them? The purpose of them is to please the Lord. So when the Jnana and Kriya are in pursuit of serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna, then they give transcendental relevance. Right? The effect then is spiritual. So that's the internal potency. But when we're using the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis for our own Icha, then that's material. So that's the difference between the spiritual and material world is whose Icha are we following? That's it. Whose Icha is it? Is it Krishna's or is it mine? Right? Close enough. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So you're dealing with inferior energy, but still it's the same potencies, because if the internal energy is transforming, it's going to be a reflection. It's like the reflection. It's the same thing. It's just that what's higher there is lower here and all those kind of stuff. You know, in the reflection. In the mirror, on your right side is reflected in the mirror, but that's the left side in the reflection. So everything becomes reversed. You know what I'm saying? So, how you say? Probably won't have any meaning, at least on this side of the room, but like when you try to do something in the mirror, you know, unless you're practiced at it, you know, you're always trying to go to the opposite side.
Yes.
You know, it's like you can see there, but when you go to move it, then you go the wrong way.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So, therefore, the qualities are one with the Lord's Sarup. Madhva quotes Shruti in Mahabharata Tatparya. Satya, sosya, mahi, mahima, grine, savo, yagyeshu, vipra, rajye. The Lord, who is truth, excellence, greatness, and power, calls to the multitude of brahmanas during sacrifices. Now that's Vedic. After describing that the Lord's Sarupa is without any material qualities, the scripture describes the Lord's additional powers. Esha Sarveshwaraha. He is the Lord of all beings. Priyad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. Even if one claims that there is difference between the quality and its possessor, it is said that the Lord is one in form since the qualities are the same as the possessor of the qualities and thus become one with him because the qualities are spiritual. See, for us, they're different because it's a matter of karma. Right? You have qualities by your work. And so the problem is that because of this ascending process, we try to project our ideas onto the Lord. Right? And even though, let's say, the scholars, that's all they're doing, right? They can't be doing anything else. So then if someone else does it, they'll complain about it. You know, if you bring up religion, oh, you're just projecting your own ideas on God. And what about the material energy? You're just projecting your ideas there. You know, and what you've projected, now that becomes authority, and now everyone has to follow it. So it is descending from the scholar.
Yes.
You know, so that's the difficulty, is that the perspective will always be mundane. So unless we come in contact with the spiritual nature, through the Vaishnavas, we will never actually know how to switch this consciousness. It's inherent to function on that spiritual platform, but unless one has the association of the devotees, one won't do it. That's all. It's that simple. One may say, oh, but this and that, whatever you want to say, but the point is it's Krishna's world. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's right. Again, the song, right? It's Krishna's world. So Krishna gave the man intelligence to make the car, gave him the intelligence to make the train. It's Krishna's world. Right? Yeah.
Maharaj?
Yes.
In the case of Lord, as the qualities and the possessor of the qualities is not different, they are the same. So in the case of the Nitya Siddhas, the same principle applies.
The Nitya Siddhas, the qualities, yeah, are not different from their spiritual form, so it's them. But you still, they're an energy of Krishna. Right? They're not producing the qualities. Mm-hmm. You know, they're coming from Krishna. But it matches their nature. So they're a jiva, they have a specific, they being a particular energy of the Lord, they have particular qualities of the Lord. And so then that manifests. In the section on Dahara Vidya, it is said, Dahara Uttare Bihā. The space, Dahara, is Vishnu. Because of subsequent statements, Brahma Sutras 1.3.14. The space, or Dahara, refers to Brahman. Like Brahman, its qualities, which are spiritual, should also be the subject of inquiry and should be sought. In the city of Brahman, there is a small lotus dwelling. In that place, there is an inner space. Within that space, the Lord is that which should be sought and which should be known, his qualities. Chandogya Upanishad 8.1.1. Right? Because he's space. This idea that there's void and nothingness, then how? But nothing is something. You know? Space is something. Without space, things can't expand. So, there, you know, you have everything in the universe crammed into an infinitesimally small spot, as if that's possible, right? First of all, you'd end up with a diamond, you know, the super diamond, you know, and how are you going to blow that up? What's blowing up this diamond, right? Diamonds don't self-destruct. It's not that you're wearing them and now and again they blow up, you know, and then you have to go back down to the jewelry shop and then, yeah, my diamond blew up. It says, yeah, it happens like that. You know, hey, what did you get? You know, like that. Yeah, it blew up. I don't know. I had all these funny little spheres and gases floating around in my living room. You know, took us forever to get rid of it. You know, yeah. You should have seen what happened when my wife's blew up. You know, that one was great. You know, like that. You know, so it doesn't blow up. Right? It's what's inside? If you take everything and compress it, then why would it blow up? What's causing it to blow up? That's the thing. And then, even if it's in infinitesimal space, what's everything around it? It's saying it's occupying a space, but how do you measure that space unless there's space? and space being an element, then how does this blowing up, you know, whatever it is, diamond, then, how you say, expand? So that means then it has to be so perfectly timed that by chance, every moment, the space element is expanding quicker than the earth, water, and fire element. Because if it went the other way, they'd have no place to go. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and that's all happening by chance, unlimitedly in all directions. You know? You can see it's just as absurd as the Mayavadi stuff. Just the Mayavadis will get down into discussing this while the scientists won't, because they can't.
Because they don't have an answer.
They don't have any answer. They don't know what time is. They don't know what space is. They cannot define it. They have some ideas how to work with it. They have symptoms and they can work with it, but they can't define it. So for them, there's only earth, water, air, and fire. And then all the elements. They don't have space. It's not one of their things. That's why they're trying to figure it out. So that's the point. Krishna is space. He is time. That's why they can't understand. Okay. Because if those are there, then everything else works.
Yeah. Can we say that actually it's just a question because the living entity is the soul. So she likes Satchitananda, means eternity and no restriction, I can say like that. So can we say that this idea for material creation like Bing Bong, it's not true, but at least this is the idea of full freedom exists in the soul.
Yeah, you can say, because liberation means freedom.
Yes.
Right? So that's the difficulty, is that, but free from what? Free from the control and all this and that. Okay. But the difficulty comes up is that then how do you explain chit and how do you explain ananda? Sat, you could say, okay, that's eternal existence. Mm. But how do you explain chit and ananda? Because if you're just a homogenous, you know, how you say, pervasion of a room, then how do you enjoy anything? You know, really hard to enjoy your popcorn or, you know, something during the movie. You know, because you're everywhere. So how do you eat that? You know what I'm saying? Somebody says, means no one ever said Lucy was happy. What's that mean? Ramanujacharya comments. In the city of Brahman, there is a lotus dwelling. In that lotus dwelling, Asmin, there is a space, Antara Aksharaha. One should seek out and desire to know both that space and the qualities arising in it. Yad Antas. Asmin Kama Samahita. In the Lord, auspicious qualities exist. Kama here means auspicious qualities since they are enjoyable. Kamya. Chandogya Upanishad 8.15. Right? Because that's the whole point. Is kama here means it's enjoyable. So sense gratification means when it's just in contact with the senses. Senses, sense objects. So you're dealing mechanically with the qualities in the space. Right? But when you're dealing beyond the senses and the sense objects with the qualities in the space, but those qualities in space are seen in context of the Lord, because He's Dahara, right? He's the qualities. Then it becomes enjoyable, right? Because on the material platform, we're trying to enjoy it, but it's not enjoyable. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say the children on Anamoy, what happens? Everything goes in their mouth. That doesn't mean they're enjoying everything.
It seems like they do.
Yeah, and so, but what's that level of enjoyment? Yeah, so that's the thing, you know. So it's shared with also like with dogs, you know. So like if they can chew on it, they will.
Yeah, they enjoy everything and they suffer from it.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. Then as you go up in consciousness, you see that, you know, everything is not enjoyable.
Yeah.
And then you get to Vijnanamoya, you understand it within the material context. For the soul, nothing is enjoyable. So, since the soul by nature is bliss, that means there must be an enjoyable nature. So that's the spiritual nature. So that's because Krishna is enjoyable. Right? And that means that the living entities are also enjoyable. So if they're interacting based on the transcendental position, then one actually gets enjoyment. Right? So the devotee actually enjoys on the transcendental platform. But it's not about enjoying. It's about pleasing Krishna, and then the enjoyment naturally comes. You know, just like you're doing some service for someone else, you're focusing on the service. You're enjoying the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, and the more they're happy, the more you're happy. But it's not focused on yourself.
Yes.
And so that's why then it can be unlimited, because if you focus on Krishna, who's unlimited, then therefore the enjoyment is. But as soon as you want to focus on the enjoyment, then you limit it to time and space. So it becomes mundane. Yeah. So don't worry. In the spiritual world, they are happy. Those qualities are described. Asmin, jav apritivi antar eva samahite. Within him there is earth and sky. Chandogya Upanishad 8.13. Right, so anything solid, anything you can visualize like that, is Krishna. At the same time, he's sky, he's the space that all that is in. Because without space, there is no, you know, it's just like, you can say, oh, but no, it's just there. No, it's not. It means it's designated. Unless there's space, you can't put something. Like if I give you a 1 meter by 1 meter, you know, square, and let's give some air, you know, how you say, airspace? Yeah. Yeah, airspace. So one millimeter up. Now, can you put your house in there? No, because the point is, so there has to be space for earth to go. So without space, you can't put anything. So how it can accommodate all this, that's Krishna.
So when they say the Mayavadi is about void is or nothingness, do they actually mean that there is absence of space?
There's nothing.
No, the space aspect is nothingness.
Then there's space and nothing?
Mm-hmm.
See, as you're approaching their philosophy as if they are intelligent.
There nothing fits into the space?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing fits into the space.
There is no space.
There's nothing. There's no nothing.
It means that's the problem. Where does nothing? What is nothing? Where does it situate itself?
Because when we say nothing, we usually mean space.
Yes, mm-hmm. But their nothing means nothing. They're Buddhists.
Can you imagine that?
That's why those following that line are a bit dry. You ever heard them chanting the mantras stuff? You know, that's you know, so that's where their head is.
Yes.
For those particular modes, yes, it's attractive. Mr. Guy, you know, one guy gets up, the young kid gets up, and he's got, it's just, it's made out of wood, and it's like a forearm, you know, from the elbow down with the hand with fingers pointing. And then he gets up and spins this and points at something and this and that, and then they all go back to banging on their stuff, and like that again. That's a, you know, so certain modes. So who means it's like everything. It's just like, isn't it obvious that everybody gets old? Isn't it obvious that everybody dies?
Mm-hmm.
But what does the individual materialist think? He'll live forever. So that's the whole thing. That's what Yudhishthira Maharaj's point is, that the most amazing thing is that everybody, every living entity has died, and everybody will agree with that, but they think they'll live forever. So we're dealing with illusion. When we say avidya shakti, it means avidya. So we have to be comfortable with that they're working in avidya, so what they're saying does not make sense. And so then we're trying to point out what is real. And then, according to their platform, then find those terminologies, those examples, those kind of things that they can relate to it so that they can start to appreciate and understand. But this idea is that, but it doesn't make sense. Why are we saying it doesn't make sense? It doesn't make sense that there's no space. Why are we saying that it doesn't? Because it doesn't. That's it. It's just, it's that foolish. Avidya means that something is seriously wrong.
And can we say that Mayavad and Buddhist philosophy, whatever is the conclusion, is the extreme most position of avidya? Because
yeah, basically. That there's nothing, so that means then what is all this going on? And then why are they even endeavor? If there's nothing, then why is there even any endeavor? You know, it's just like, you know, it's just like it's dark outside. Don't worry, you know, give it a little time, the sun will come up and it'll be fine. You know, so if everything's nothing and that, then why are you even making an attempt? Because just give it some time, it'll all be nothing. Because it already is nothing. So that's the whole point, is that due to attachment, then they're trying to make something out of nothing. Mm-hmm. Or nothing out of something. Yes, that's yes. That's more likely what they think. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Raj, it seems that this time, this question of time and space, it's crucial to understand about what is real spiritual life.
Yes, yes. Without understanding the Vaishnava philosophy, you can't actually fully understand anything on any level. Because you can say, no, but modern science, but what's it for? You know, atoms split and things like that. Yeah, they do that. You know, that's what's going on in the sun. You know, and so it heats the place. And if it does in the sun, it heats the place very nicely. But you get, you know, how you say, enthusiastic, and you sit there and split the atoms yourself, then it's like bringing the sun right down here. You know? And so then, you know, then what's the point? So, you know what I'm saying? So, there's no bikini at all.
Yes.
Right? Somebody said? So, that's the difficulty. Is that they don't know what to do with it. You find it, so what? Kids find all kinds of stuff. They found their dad's baseball bat, and they found their mom's, you know, crystal vase from, you know, that funny island off of, you know, whatever it is, Venice or something, right? You know? And so they're happy. They're having a great time.
Makes a nice sound.
It makes a great sound, you know. It works really good. You know, and you can hit the, microwave. It really makes a lot of sound like that, you know. You know, it's hollow. It's you know, thin metal, you know, like that. You can really have a good time. You know, saying so. That's the whole point. Is it's just children, but because of false ego, then these big children don't like to be called children. They like to feel that they know everything and are running everything and like that. You know, so they're that's why it said they're fools, because a fool doesn't actually understand things properly. He thinks he's in a position that he's not. That's the point. We're not saying that they're not able to use their intelligence in mechanically and observe all kinds of things and do things. What we're saying is they don't know what to do with it. That's foolish. Just like, let's say someone has money, and then he gets a whole lot of money like that, huge amount of money, and he wins the lottery. Then he just calls his friends, hey, let's go to Vegas, let's have some fun. You know, and in 2-3 days, then he has nothing. So would we say, yes, this is an intelligent man, this is the man we want to follow, this is our, you'd say he's a fool. He could have taken that money and invested it. You know, done something worthwhile. If you're going to lose it like that, go give it in charity. But that's the whole thing, is we're taking it that, if we say fool means, oh, they don't have any gray matter that's functioned. Synapses don't work and stuff like that. We're saying is that they don't know how to use it, so ultimately that's foolishness. Right? We generally take it fool means you can't understand.
Yes.
You know? But the point is they're a fool because at some point that's a value they can't understand. So they may understand a lower level, but they can't understand a higher level. So that's the foolishness. So because of this, we get it, oh no, why you can say that? Oh, we can't say that. Oh, we shouldn't say these things. And so then where is the education? So their ignorance becomes our measure for judging what we should say in Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So our measurement is Maya. And so what will they get? Maya. Right? Yeah, more Maya. Does that make sense? Yes.
Rascaldom means
fools.
Okay, but what it means?
Rascaldom means that you're a fool. That's one thing. Rascal means now you give, you know, you give trouble to others or say things that aren't true and try to establish it and stuff. In other words, you're doing something wrong. Foolish means you don't know what to do. And then rascal is that within not knowing what to do, now you make trouble. You know, try to claim that it's important.
So fool spreading his foolishness.
Yes, he's spreading his foolishness. Just like Manu says, if you have a bogus philosophy, then you'll get a reaction for that. You know, because it's bogus. But if you preach your bogus philosophy, you'll get 100 times the reaction. That makes sense. So in other words, rascaldom's worse than foolishness. You know, foolishness is bad. See, it's like foolishness is you're standing too close to the edge and can fall off. Rascaldom is you're inviting everybody else over. See how fun it is.
And if you push somebody.
Yeah, and if he pushes them, then now he's a demon. Now he takes on asura bhava, right? So Mayaya Pratigyana, right? So then he starts to preach that. Then he becomes a Narottama. Then people are destroyed by that, and he's happy with that. Now he becomes an asura. Right? Yes. Within him there is earth and sky, Chandogya Upanishad 8.13. This describes his vibhutis. Many other qualities are described. Ayam Atma Pahata Pa Ma. He is devoid of all sins. Chandogya Upanishad 8.15. The speaker also describes that these qualities are situated in the Lord with words like Yad Anta and Kama. Chandogya Upanishad 8.11 and 5. In order to show Dahara or Brahman, one should seek out and know the qualities such as Dvav A Pritivi. After understanding the qualities, since they are taught first, then Dahara, the Lord, is taught. Right? So we understand qualities, then we can understand the Lord. But the point is, the Lord and his qualities are non-different. So if I say the Lord with qualities, I don't understand. So you start with the qualities and then like that. These qualities arising from a sarup are also mentioned by the guru of Advaita Vad in his commentary on Vishnu Sahasranam. Sakshi means one who sees everything by a spiritual intelligence directly, without obstruction. Ishvara means he who is amazing, without upadis. Shruti says, Esha Sarveshwaraha, he is the Lord of all. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. So he's also pointing out that Shankara will agree with this. But the problem is then, you know, it's being presented in such a way that people become bewildered. Though the word sarva, all, includes upadis, in this case it excludes such things. It means he is the Lord of all powers, Aishwarya. Right? Because the upadis means that they're something that's put on, like a designation. But the point is these are non-different from him, so they're not upadis. Right? And he being transcendental, the qualities he has aren't upadis. His form is not an upadi, it's him. Right? How can one describe the entity which is pure knowledge, devoid of blue or yellow forms? How can Brahman, which is indivisibly, be divided into forms like the form of Vishnu? How can Vaikuntha be his form? This will be shown by the words attested by the experience of the most authorized sages. The Lord has a form devoid of all upadis and is endowed with vibhutis, which are self-manifesting. Right, so he manifests the vibhutis himself because he's the source of the vibhutis. They're non-different from him. The word bhaga can be derived from bhasvan, shining or self-manifesting. This indicates that his qualities arise from his swarup. If the affix vat, endowed with, in the word Bhagavan is given a meaning, according to either dualism or monism, qualities being different from or one with the possessor, Brahman. Even in Advaitavad, one cannot avoid the conclusion that the qualities are functions of the Lord's Swarup Shakti. By accepting Bhagavan along with his qualities, Bhaga, which are functions of his Swarup Shakti, one entity of Advaya Jnana can be accomplished. Right? Because they're wanting this oneness, but at the same time they're having a problem describing the variety. But the point is the variety is non-different from his Swarup, and he's manifesting it. He's expanding it by his own potency. So it's not coming from something else. So that means the potency he's expanding is non-different from him. There's no necessity of using interpretation in the form of jaha, ajahal, lakshana. Thus, it is strongly stated that Bhagavan is advayam jnanam, Bhagavan iti shabdite. The proof is the knowers of tattva, tattva vidha. This means the realization of the sages. Shabdite indicates that the scriptures declare this, right? So the scriptures declaring this, the sages are declaring this. In this way, Brahman and Bhagavan have been described, right? Because you're pointing out that he is the non-dual entity, right? As a person. And then from him, you have this aspect of where he's Dahara. He's space. It's basically that Brahman means it's how everything, the existence of everything. So it has to be able to sit in that existence. So he is that space. Right? So we say the material world is coming from Brahman. Means because without Brahman, where does all these elements sit? Priti, having described the form of the Lord, the next section commences to clear the misconception that the form is an imposition on Brahman. So now we put that there's a transcendental form and all that. Now we have to deal with. So we've established that, and then the impersonalists will have to accept that because of the shlokas, the acharyas, and everything like this, right? So now they'll have their own idea how to get around this by saying Ishwara is a manifestation of all that, just like you said, and all those qualities you attribute, they go to Ishwara. But the point is, problem is Ishwara is in goodness, so he's material. So that contradicts the whole thing that's been established. But still, you have to deal with that because. You know, it's the last-ditch attempt, right? This is done by explaining the transcendental nature of Lord Swarup Shakti, right? So we're going to see that it's transcendental, so it's beyond. So they've already accepted that he's transcendental. At the same time as then they're trying to say he's mundane. So that doesn't make sense, but, you know, we're not saying that they do. Okay. So now, Adhyayana 2, Adhikarana 2. Shaktis naturally coexist with Brahman. Anuchedas 9 through 14. Adhikarana Prakashika. Having described the form of Bhagavan in the previous Adhikarana, several doubts may arise as to how Brahman, who is defined as Nirguna, can have qualities or Shaktis. So now we've established Bhagavan, so you have to establish that transcendental position. This and the next Adhikarana answers all the questions regarding Brahman having form and qualities. This Adhikarana specifically deals with the doubt, quote, how Brahman, the only entity that existed before the creation, can have Shaktis coexisting with him if he's the only entity. Right? Because they can't see. It's not different because they're trying to project their own idea of being Shakti onto the Lord. Right? And then if they get, okay, they're nothingness, then the Lord's nothingness, right? If I'm nothing, the Lord's nothing, right? And then we all merge in the great nothingness. Mm-hmm. Or I have a source, so that means he has to have a source. Mm-hmm. So the whole point is their view is always from their own perspective. They can't see from the transcendental perspective.
It's material logic.
It's material logic. That's the point of avidya. Avidya means you cannot see things properly. And then they may be in the mode of more situated in goodness and the lifestyle, but it doesn't mean that they're any less in avidya. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point. Then someone in passion in avidya or ignorance in avidya, then you see different manifestations. So of them, the ones situated in goodness within avidya, then they're going to socially be, you know, have more knowledge, behave better, have more qualities and all these kind of things. But at the same time, it doesn't mean they're in any less ignorance. You know what I'm saying? It would be just like, let's say, we take three people. One's totally in ignorance, one's totally in passion, and one's totally in goodness. Right? Not pure goodness, but, you know, material. Now we take them all, and we take them down to the spa. And at the spa, we dip them all, you know, up to the top of their heads in the mud bath. And bring them out. So now is any one of them less covered than the other? No, they're all exactly the same. You know? Does that make sense? But how they'll react, how they'll talk to you, you know, in the dealings of how you're now going to clean them up, that will be different according to their mode.
It won't be the same in this particular situation. They will all say the same.
No.
If it was against their will.
The point is no, they chose to. So.
Okay.
That's why we came here. We chose to take up the material. Even if it's against your will, it's still how they react. How does Yudhishthira Maharaj react? Right? Something goes right, there might be a slight smile. Something goes wrong, he's just sober. How does it go if Duryodhana is right or wrong? He's punching his fist in the air like, you know, he just, you know, kicked a goal in, you know, for what do you call it, Manchester or something. You know? So, you know, so that's how you tell the difference in the, just how he reacts.
But we also sometimes use this inductive logic when you say that Srila Prabhupada sometimes says that the stroke has variety, that's why source of this variety.
The what has variety? I can't hear so well.
The creation has variety, that's why source must have variety.
The source has variety. No, we're just showing you, because we only see things inductive, but the point is satkaryavad means the qualities of the source is in the effect. The cause, the qualities of the cause is in the effect. That's satkaryavad. It's not the other way around. So it's descending knowledge. But we're only explaining it for people there, because they see that logic that way. Then once they get to the point where they accept that, then you can talk from the deductive.
Okay.
But until they do...
We just only use this way for proving something, but mostly yeah. We use for understanding, we use deductive.
Means the only way you can understand is deductive. But because we're dealing with our idea of logic, you have to deal with the logic, you know, in these ways. If they accept the Shastra, it's easier to use the deductive. Though they're still applying their inductive method to it. You know, we're discussing the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, which is descending knowledge, but they're still approaching it from their ascending point of view.
Yes.
So you, with logic, then you're defeating it. So all that's left then is the actual deductive understanding. But for people who aren't accepting Shastra, you use whatever will work for them that they will catch it. You know, because certain things they will accept in that way. You know, they've heard it from others, there's authority, or, you know, something like that. So, it's just that you're doing it, you're showing it backwards doesn't mean that it's now changed. Now it's become inductive. So, you know, it should be you take off your shoes, then you get into bed. Right? But someone who's gotten into bed first with a shoe, then you take the shoes off. Somebody says, you know, so how you say, your part of the world, that might be a more common example. Especially the farther north you go. Right?
Cold.
Cold.
Up north then.
Yeah, that's why they keep the shoes.
They keep the shoes. Yeah.
Of course.
Doesn't work very good, though.
No.
Do you sleep in the cave?
Huh?
Do you sleep in the cave and somebody
gets... Well, the problem is when you sleep, your feet kind of swell up, so it gets very uncomfortable. No, I tried once as a kid. I was reading something about it that these guys were so hardcore, they would not, you know, like that. So I tried it once. I went to bed with my boots on, like that, you know. After a couple of hours, you have to take your boots off. Yeah, because if you want to go to sleep with your shoes on, then you become, you know, a horse or a cow or something like that. You know, they don't take their shoes off. But they also, the horses also sleep standing up, right? So. Okay. In this Adhikarana, first in the Anucheda 9, Srila Jiva Goswami cites the verse Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastu, Srimad Bhagavatam 112, to prove that Bhagavan is the real Vastu, or the ultimate goal of life, and is understood by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam without envy or selfish intentions. He gives the highest bliss to his devotees and uproots the miseries caused by Maya Shakti by using his Sarup Shakti. Right? Because Maya Shakti means that it's not connected to him, it will always give trouble. But now, if a Sarup Shakti means it's connected to him, that's how you uproot the miseries of material life, is through the spiritual. Through this verse, it is established that Bhagavan is the highest feature of the Absolute Truth, and he possesses his own Sarup Shakti, right? So the Bhagavat Sandarbha, you're establishing that the Lord is the Absolute Truth, right? But we have the three aspects of it. It means that he is the Absolute Truth. You have Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the topmost feature, the highest feature of the Absolute Truth. So you have to be able to appreciate that, because otherwise when we say the Absolute, we will generally be referring to impersonal aspects. So that's why here it's always talking about impersonal in Bhagavan. We have very little mention of Paramatma, because generally people will just see Paramatma as Bhagavan, like that, you know, or they'll see Paramatma as Brahman, you know, depending upon what school they're in, right? So we won't. That's not dealt with so much here. You're establishing that he's the Absolute, but that Absolute's a person. Then, if that's accepted, then now as Paramatma, as a person, he's controlling everything. But originally, then it's there. Is he as that person? It's about all this, all his energies being applied for rasa, for interacting with the devotee.
Also, like in order to explain. Appreciate Paramatma having Shaktis. First, you have established that the Absolute has Shaktis. Then, after having Shaktis, means it's already Bhagavan.
Yes, Bhagavan, but then Bhagavan can come as Paramatma. Because he's localized feature, he's personal, but localized. So that's why Bhagavan is the Supreme. So, when you say the Absolute Truth, you're establishing Bhagavan, the personal. So. In the next three Anuchetas, through this verse it establishes that Bhagavan is the highest feature of the Absolute Truth and he possesses his own Sarup Shakti. In the next three Anuchetas, the contradictory nature of the various Shaktis of the Lord is discussed, right? Because we'll say it's contradictory, so how can it be logical, right? The Maya Shakti and Sarup Shakti of the Lord has opposite functions, yet they have the common source, which is the Supreme Lord. Hence, the Supreme Lord can have various contradictory shaktis simultaneously. In the Anuchetas 13 through 14, the inconceivable nature of his shaktis is elaborated. Brahman is the possessor of many intrinsic energies, or antaranga shaktis, uru shaktihi. This means that the shakti is natural or inherent to the Lord. Without his shakti, the material world, spiritual world, and the jivas would not exist or function. The argument that Shaktis cannot coexist with the Lord, since the Lord is all-pervading, is refuted by the inconceivable nature of his Shaktis. Inconceivable means to perform the impossible. Because he is there and he's the source of them. But the point is how is he Shaktiman unless there's Shakti? How is there Shakti unless there's Shaktiman? So we're also, the thing we're bound, like we saw before, the discussion was about space. Now there's that as about time. Because we say, no, you first have to have the generator, then turning it on, then you get electricity. But the point is then we're creating something. But he being the source, he's not created. So they're always existing together. So that's the inconceivable point. He's beyond all this. You know, we want him to fit into our logic, but at the same time, he's beyond. You know, and everything that we can't explain by logic, then they'll just say, you know, they'll come up with some other answer. Right, so even the Mayavadis will say inconceivable. When they can't explain their philosophy, then, you know, then they'll say it's inconceivable. But that's the whole point. If it's inconceivable, then that means why can't there be Shaktis? Right?
Maharaj, inconceivable, we say, however, we are still able to explain the inconceivability aspect.
Sorry?
Even though the Vaishnavas say inconceivable, but still we are able to explain it. Because
yes.
Realization, we're able to realize that.
Yes. Yes, as much as Krishna reveals. But the point is, the impersonalists, they just say that because they can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, in other words, it's just a trick. By saying that, then everybody's quiet.
Okay.
That's all. You know, and then they can feel very, you know, very good. Because
mm-hmm.
they want to be an authority, and people are doubting. So then they say that, and now no one has anything to say. So then. Now they can feel good about themselves. There are three types of Shakti, Antaranga, Bahiranga, and Tatastha. These three give rise to four manifestations. By the Antaranga Shakti, called Sarup Shakti, the Lord's complete Sarup and as well his powers such as Vaikuntha, Sarup Vaibhava, manifest. The Tatastha Shakti manifests the individual pure jivas, like rays of the sun. The Bahiranga or Maya Shakti manifests as Pradhan, with insentient external objects like various colors in its rays. You want that? So you have the Lord, you have the manifestation of his internal potencies, you have the jivas and the external. So with these three energies, so the Antaranga reveals himself, and reveals everything around him. Though the Lord's Sarup, his spiritual manifestation, Vaibhav, the jivas and matter, right, so those are the four, manifested from Antaranga, Tatastha, and Bahiranga Shaktis, are one with the Lord and are thus non-different from the Lord. They are not equal in all respects. Thus they are localized portions of the Lord. Nor does the Lord take the form of these Shaktis. Therefore, their faults do not apply to the Lord. So, they're manifest from him. He doesn't take their forms. They're expansions of his potencies. So he doesn't have any of the faults that one may find in any of these. You know, if one, yeah. So localized means they're in a particular place. Vaikuntha is in a particular place. This material world's in a particular place, right? The jivas are individuals like that. His form, then he manifests where he wants to. Like that. Hence it is irretrievably established that Brahman has Shaktis that coexist with him eternally. Anucheda 9. The quality of being Brahman, Bhagavan is not an imposition on Brahman, but arises from his Sarup. In order to establish this point, another section commences. Right, so before we were just establishing that he has. Okay, now accepting, now if we have to accept, because in the beginning you'll just say it's all one and not want to discuss anything. But when you point out the things he has, the Shaktis, then they will accept. But then they'll go to the next point of saying, but it's an imposition. Brahman doesn't actually have. So that's why they come up with the thing Ishwar. So in that form where he has all that, that's Ishwar. That's not Brahman. So now you have to establish that. No, that the qualities and all that arise from the Sarup. You've always said before they're non-different, and you mentioned it, but now you have to argue that point.
So here they say that their concept of Ishwar and our concept of Bhagavan is the same.
Why would you say they're the same?
No, they say that. Is that their understanding? That what we say as the one, they say as the Ishwar.
Yeah. Now what?
Because Ishwar is still the lower position, but the one is higher.
Are the Mayavadis correct or not?
They are not.
So then what's the problem? Means we have to accept that what they say is wrong. We just have to accept that. And so their perception on things will be wrong. Like that. And so they attribute, you know, they're saying the material world, which is real, is not real. It doesn't exist. Right? So it's an illusion. So that's the point is, whatever we say is one thing, they'll say is the other. Where we say it's one, they'll say it's different. Where we say it's different, they'll say it's one. That's the avidya shakti. You know, religion becomes irreligion, irreligion becomes religion. It just becomes reversed. So, therefore, whatever we say, they'll say the opposite. That's all. The Supreme Lord becomes immediately captured in the heart of the accomplished devotee by hearing Bhagavatam, and even by those who have suddenly developed the desire to hear it. This does not happen with other works. In the Bhagavatam alone, created by the Lord itself, is presented the real permanent object, which can be understood by those without selfish intentions, and which bestows auspiciousness and release from the material world of miseries. In the Bhagavatam alone is presented the process for attaining that highest object, devoid of all material goals and liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2. Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastu. The Lord, Vastu, is to be known and is real. Two terms describe him. Shivadam Tapa Trayon Mulanam. He gives the highest bliss, Shivadam, and uproots the three miseries, Tapa Trayon Mulanam. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2. He gives bliss by his Srup Shakti. Using his Srup Shakti, he uproots the miseries caused by Maya Shakti. Vyasa speaks the verse. Srila Prabhupada commented. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activities, or from the point of view of the common human activity, sense gratification is the basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruit of activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshipping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature and becoming one with him. The impersonal aspect, so that's why you see is the upasamakanda for them, is still a karma. Right? But if upasana means worshipping of Vishnu, then it's counted in as devotion. Right? Karma is always going to be karma. Gyan is going to be gyan. Upasana means all the, how you worship the demigods, like you see here. There are three paths. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshipping different demigods for promotion of the planets of the demigods. Right? You specifically want to go to a particular planet and things like that. The other is...
Isn't it karma kanda?
It's all within that context, but the one is you're specifically worshipping demigods, the other you're doing ritualistic activities. You may end up in the same place.
I thought it's the same.
Generally speaking, they're the same, because upasana, if you're worshipping demigods, then it's karma. Right, but we also sometimes define upasana meaning where you're the process of worship. So if you're worshiping the Supreme Lord, then it's not counted. And that, just like yoga is counted as karma, so we don't have to necessarily mention it. So you say karma and gyan. You don't have to say yoga. But if you want to be very clear, then you say karma, gyan, and yoga. You know, just in case someone might say, "Well, what about yoga?" Right. So then it's mentioned. Because they're either going from mystic cities and that, you know, transferring to better material positions, or they're merging in Brahman. So either way, they're most will all be karma, and a few of them may be gone. Right? But if they do it in connection with worshipping the Lord, then it's bhakti. You know, same way you take the karma, use it for the Lord, then it becomes devotional service. You take the knowledge, use it for the Lord. Because that's what they're originally for. Because what we're doing is, you're taking the activities, the karma, the activities and the knowledge, right? They'll be used in the spiritual world to serve the Lord. But in the material world, we don't. And there it's nicely balanced and everything like that. And here you can have, you know, some combination, but generally you'll find those prefer jnana and those who prefer kriya. In other words, those who are more enamored by the kriya shakti, they're going to be the karmis. Those who are more enamored by the jnana shakti, they're going to be the jnanis. Does that make sense? But the devotee, the karma, the jnana and kriya shaktis are meant to serve Krishna. So devotees are those who then are taking these two and engaging in the Lord's service. So that's why we're not used to this, because karma means it's for karma, jnana means it's for jnana. And then religion, it's just an extension of karma or jnana. Right? You know, just like, you know, the moral system you have, God is simply a support for that. You know, it's like if we're having trouble getting these things ourselves, we turn to God, we get it a little easier.
Later, Guru Goswami explains all the connections between all the Vedas, Upangas and Vedangas to the Supreme Lord.
Oh, okay.
There he mentioned.
Okay, very good. He's saying later it will, he'll describe how all these different branches of the Vedic knowledge all connect to Krishna. The impersonal aspect of the Absolute is not the highest. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature, and above this is the personal feature of the Absolute, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the Absolute Truth in his personal feature. It is higher than impersonalist literature and higher than the Jnanakanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher than the Karmakanda division and even higher than the Upasanakanda division because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Right? So, in other words, worship in, from the Upasanakanda, and then knowledge of the Jnanakanda and activities of the Karmakanda, those all being connected to the Lord, that's called bhakti. Right? But without bhakti, then you call them upasana, karma, and Jnanakanda. Okay. So, you know, it's just like, let's say, someone is preparing lunch for the deities, right? So you can just say, what are they doing? They're doing service, right? Because that's actually what they're doing. Now, technically, the service they're performing is cooking, right? Now, let's say you don't have a devotee cooking for the Lord, and they're cooking. We'll just call it cooking. We won't call it service. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is all these activities and knowledge of the Veda, then when they're used in connecting to Krishna, we call it bhakti. But when it's not, we give it by its specific mechanical name. You know? So, yeah. And even higher than the Upasanakanda division, because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. In the Karmakanda, there is competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification. And there is similar competition in the Jnanakanda and the Upasanakanda. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all these because it aims at the Supreme Truth, which is the substance or root of all categories. Mm-hmm. From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. Right, so Bhagavatam, you'll know the substance means Krishna, and then that the, his energies are the categories that have expanded from him. Right, because they're categories, because even though they're non-different from him, you can tell the difference. Right, there's variety within his sarup. And it's not that all these points are exactly the same. Right, there's inferior and superior energies even within the sarup. So then we can tell the difference in these positions, in the karma, jnana, and upasana. So, knowing the substance, then you can know the categories. So these are categories. What is the difference aspect? Mm-hmm. The substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. So they're relative in relation to Him. They don't stand on their own. You can't have, you know, power on its own. Okay. Nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time, the energies are different from the substance. This conception is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates this simultaneously one and different philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadyasya, Srimad Bhagavatam 111 Sutra. This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to establish the energy as the absolute. Right? So some try to say the energy is the absolute, so therefore everything is coming from Pradhan. Right? And then you're going to have Brahman. But nothing comes from Brahman. It's all coming from Pradhan. So in that way, according to all philosophies except Vaishnavism, Pradhan is the source of everything. Right? When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. Development of this transcendental consciousness, so you're going to have those who are exclusively monistic and those who are exclusively dualistic. Development of this transcendental consciousness grounded in the conception of simultaneously one and different leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. Because the other ones, you're going to be working within material consciousness because it's not actually the transcendental position. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Pranamani.